6 never, ever marks the spot.
I am altering the deep. Pray I don't alter it any further.
Most of the intelligence community doesn't believe he exists. The ones that do call him the Winter Soldier.
I'm Batman.
Dracarys.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of the Top 5 Report, the podcast that knows the difference between a Cardassian and a Kardashian. But we do feel that the latter would be better to party with. My name is Drillby, your host for the evening. Along with me, as always, is my brother, Peter. How are you, sir? How was your week? How are things?
I'm here. Yeah, I don't know. The latter or the former, which one's the better to party with? I do know which one's better to keep up with, so... But that might be a discussion for a different time, so...
Yeah, that's a whole nother podcast. I do think it's funny that Star Trek created the Cardassians and then the Kardashians got super famous. And it's really difficult when you're trying to say names now. So if you have to talk about Trek, it's just like, wait, how do I say that again? I think it's funny.
No, it's definitely hilarious. And I'm sure there's like a lot of Star Trek fans that are consistently annoyed by it. So that's another fun bit.
Consistently annoyed by it. At any rate, how was your week, man? Anything exciting?
No, just a lot of busy stuff going on. But yeah, nothing too exciting. How about you?
About the same. But hey, I'm getting ready for a 3-day weekend. As we all are. So we're actually at the time of this recording, it is before we are recording this before Labor Day. This episode will drop on Labor Day. So while you're trying to wake up from any like sleeping in, doing stuff, if you do anything around the house, any kind of laying around, this is a great podcast to listen to while you're just hanging around on a lazy Labor Day afternoon. because my plan on Labor Day is to do nothing. maybe play a video game, maybe take a nap. I don't want to do anything.
Yeah, I was going to say, I always like to use to listen to podcasts when I'm multitasking. So maybe on Memorial Day, if you're out and you're like grilling, you know, you're cooking up some burgers.
There you go.
Throw the headphones in and listen to the Top 5 Report. Or even better, take that playlist off the Bluetooth speakers, you know, stop listening to like your favorite Jimmy Buffett songs on Spotify or whatever it is. Listen to the Top 5 Report. Everybody at your party will thank you for it and it'll be great. So,
here yes, you go. Well said. You saved me there. Yeah, I couldn't have said that better. Anyway, let's not waste any more time. Peter, what did you watch this week?
Yeah, absolutely. So, like I said, I've been pretty busy, so I'm super, super behind on stuff. Drew, much to your chagrin, I'm sure I still haven't watched any of Alien Earth. I can get into my reasons why not, but I can chalk it up to not getting my schedule to line up right to pull that off yet.
That's okay. So, you're 4 episodes in now, bro.
Yeah, I know. But I always enjoy binging things more anyways. Okay. At least that's my way of looking at the bright side of the fact that I still haven't found the time to watch it. So yeah, basically all I've been doing is I'm still just catching up on Peacemaker, catching up on season 1, because for some reason I didn't watch it when it came out. So I'm only like 3 episodes in of season 1, but I'm still cool. Enjoying it. I finally saw what a butterfly was, you know, like the first 2 episodes, they're just talking about butterflies. And just like Peacemaker, you're getting pissed off because you have no idea what it is and nobody will say it. So they finally showed what one was at the end of this last episode I watched. Drew, just to let you know where I'm at. The episode.
Will you refresh my memory on what a butterfly is?
Oh, wow. Okay, so.
And I say that because I watched the show and I'm like, what is he talking about?
So the first episode, Peacemaker, at the end of the episode, he hooks up with a girl from a bar, and she's like this weird like 80s hair metal chick, And she turns violent and she grabs like a butcher knife, and they have this like massive crazy fight scene, like in her apartment and then into the parking lot. And she's like some crazy person, like she's got superpowers and stuff. And after that fight scene resolves, everybody keeps talking about how Peacemaker killed a butterfly. Like, holy crap, yes. Peter Peacemaker,
you know what?
Went home with a
you
butterfly.
You know what? Now that you recap that scene, I remember what a butterfly was. I honestly thought it was some weird joke that I forgot about, or some visual gag, or like some kind of weird sexual joke or something that like I just forgot from the scene from the show. Yes, I remember what butterflies are.
No, it's spoiler alert. It seems to be a parasitic alien that inhabits, like infects a human and like lives inside of their cranial cavity, and I guess pretty much like possesses them, almost like starts controlling the human. The episode I just watched is the team finally goes on their first mission, and they're basically supposed to assassinate this I believe it was a congressman as well as his family, because it was suspected that they were all butterflies. Now, this weird butterfly alien invasion story, I don't really know all the ins and outs of it, but it seems to be like a pretty cool sort of, like, you know, it has levels of like weird gore, weird sci-fi stuff. It has like the weird like conspiracy thriller levels that I really like as well. So yeah, I'm just really enjoying it. It's super fun. I'm super behind the times, and I think the reason I never watched this when it came out was really just, one was superhero fatigue. Like, for me, it came out at a time where I just wasn't like itching for superhero content for whatever reason. But also, like, I think I don't know if I fell in love with the Suicide Squad, like the James Gunn Suicide Squad movie. I don't know if I fell in love with it like everybody else did. And I think that's another reason why I didn't jump onto this right away. But sure. I am enjoying the show a lot. I do plan on revisiting the Suicide Squad as well. I probably should have before I watched the show, but, you know, I like to watch things out of order sometimes. But yeah, that's honestly about it for me. So yeah, you can jump in, Drew, unless you had any comments on any of that.
Well, my comment and or question is, what how are you liking the theme song now that you've seen a few episodes?
No, it's good. It's very catchy.
And it gets better every episode, doesn't it?
Yep. I mean, I added it to one of my playlists on my phone. So
I know you did.
It's good stuff. The music in the show is like really fun. Oddly enough, I was like kind of on a huge like 80s metal kick before I even started the show, and that's what a lot of the music in the show is. So that's pretty hilarious, and it's like really fitting for Peacemaker. Like, you could totally see him listen to, whether it's like you know, Pretty Boy Floyd or Cinderella or any of the other bands they mention in the show. So that's super fun. The other funny thing about the show that I just notice. People have talked about how James Gunn is extremely, like, chronically online. Like, he's one of the few people where when you comment to him on Twitter, he responds, like, right away. And he kind of, I feel like that's kind of evident in his writing. Like, you know, like Peacemaker's dad calling him a simp, for example. There's stuff like that where I'm like, James Gunn is very online, and I'm kind of down with it, but it's just hilarious that like a HBO production is using the word simp, you know, and stuff like that.
Sure.
So I think that's pretty funny, but no, overall, I'm really enjoying it. So
sure. Well, good. I'm glad you are. And I look forward to it as you go. I'm holding back a little bit on Peacemaker season 2, because Peacemaker season 2 started, and I really want to watch it, but it takes place like, what, 1 week after the events of Superman, and okay. my wife has not watched Superman yet. So I kind of like want to wait until she's seen it and then say, okay, now we can watch Peacemaker, you know? So I might have to like hold off on Peacemaker season 2 a little bit and then binge it once I get a chance to watch Superman a second time. So
that's kind of cool. Maybe I'll catch up and we'll be reviewing those episodes together.
Yeah,
I actually am kind of in a similar conundrum with Alien Earth, because my wife told me that she actually really wants to watch the show with me, which is awesome. But she also said she's not in the mood to watch it right now. And so that's part of the reason where I'm like, well, what am I supposed to do? I really want to start it, you know? So
you're like, I have a podcast to do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So well, that's the thing. Like, I got posted on that development.
Well, normally what'll happen is like on a day that I have to shave, for example, not that everyone needs to know my shower routine, but I'll get home from work. I always get home from work before anyone else gets into the house. So on a day that I need to like shave, a lot of times I'll come home from work, shower, shave before anyone gets home, and then I'm all cleaned up and ready to go. Then I don't have to worry about any jockeying for the shower or like running into bathroom issues like, oh, hey, you need it before I do, that kind of conversation in the house, right?
Yeah.
Well, today I was like, I got home and I'm like, I need to be up to date on Alien. So I watched Alien instead.
There you go.
I'm like, you know, because I want to get that in because I'm the only person in the house who's like, yes, Alien, let's do this. That being said, the fourth episode of Alien Earth dropped. It was wonderful in all the wonderful alien ways they can be. and it's great, man. First off, the Xenomorph, dude, like, it is what they're doing. It's just brilliant. It's brilliant. Like, they understood the assignment. I know I said that last week, but they understood the assignment. And putting this in a long form, it's so good. And I do not want to oversell this, but it's just fantastic. And then some of these other creatures, man, I'm just loving these other creatures that are not the Xenomorph. They're just really, first off, they're really clever, like on a monster scale. They're really clever on a creepy alien, like what is that thing gonna do to me kind of scale. And you kind of got a little more of a glimpse into one of them this past episode, which I was really excited about because it was the one like I really wanted to know more about.
Nice.
Just because it's a really creepy, I'm like, what, dude? It's like the extra, it's like the side one that they focused the most on, and I'm like, yeah, show me more of that. But there is a couple more that we haven't seen yet. Like, I think there's five total species outside of the Xenomorph. So I'm like waiting for to see more of these things. Yeah, really cool. Really liked the episode. I look forward to discussing when you get there. The other thing that I watched.
I was going to say, if you did want to spoil anything, that's fine. I know I'm kind of bad for being behind, so it's all good.
Sure. The other thing that I watched was one of my adult D&D players asked me if I had watched Predator Killer of Killers, which is the Hulu animated movie. And at the time that him and I were talking, I said, no, I have not. And he goes, okay, well, you need to watch that. And I was like, okay, it's on my list. And he's like, no. It predicates to our game and you need to watch it. And I go, okay. How does it like link to our game? He's like, you will understand when you see it. I need that in my life. And I'm like, I don't know what that means. And he goes, just go watch it. So I was probably about 20 minutes in and I go, are you talking about The Following? And he goes, yep, I need that for my character. and I said, okay, basically it's a dual wield weapon kind of a situation. And I was like, okay, well, I'm not opposed to this, but let's talk about it as like a homebrew object to not make it too overpowered. because I think it's really cool. And the whole battle sequence, I'm like, this is amazing. I totally understand why he wants this, but we got to make it work properly on the table. So, Bill, if you're listening, I'm with you. I want to make sure it's not too OP. But no, Killer of Killers, it's awesome. The animation style that they go with is very reminiscent of Star Wars Clone Wars style animation.
Yeah.
Which makes for really cool visuals. This is like an anthology movie, if you will. It's separate stories. So the very first story is like a Viking. And a predator lands, and so these Vikings are like raiding this village, and this predator is tracking the one. Clearly, this is the Viking that's like the one the predator is going to hunt down, and it becomes the Viking versus the predator, right? Then it flashes forward timeline, and they do a ninja one in Japan, ninjas and samurais and stuff. That one right now, yeah, that one's probably my favorite one. It was fantastic. And then they jump up to World War II, very reminiscent of like a Pearl Harbor kind of a thing, and the Predator attacks. Just there's several of like, it's just the way they piece these shows together. It's cool. It's a really cool thing. I don't want to say too much more because I don't want to spoil all of them, but just go watch it. It's awesome. But I think the ninja one was my favorite. I think the ninja one was my favorite because of the physical, like all the ninja stuff for sure. But then the physical look of the Predator, I think, was my favorite. Thinking back. Yeah, it was cool. I liked it a lot. So when and if you get a chance, it's a fun one. But that was my big watching and stuff for this go around. And then I talked recently about that comic, that short miniseries that DC is doing called The New History of the DC Universe. Yeah. Issue 2 dropped, and it's great. That's really all I can say about it, is it's just great. I like issue 1 ended where Krypton exploded, and issue 2 starts with Clark basically arriving on Earth. And then they're like, they do a little bit of like Clark, and then it goes in at the same time. Millionaire kid's parents were murdered and blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? Like it's, and now you're into more. Yeah. Okay, cool. This, that, and the other thing. And oh, formation of the Justice League. And oh, Darkseid is from Apocalypse is like not happy about it. So they're, you know, and it's kind of like, it's almost like reading a documentary about the DC universe, because, you know, like you're just getting a revamping of everything. So I'm now into more familiar territory, but it's just a really cool book and the art's really cool. And so if you get a chance to read these, and it's a 4-issue miniseries. I look forward to the next couple. Wow. So yeah.
Is anything like out of the box? Is like all the events kind of lining up?
All the events line up for the most part. I haven't run into anything. I've read so much of the DCU, so much. I haven't run into anything that like contradicts like an old degree of canon. You know, okay. Not yet anyway. One of the big things about canon, and I think when I get into the later books. And they start getting into, so when you get to like Crisis and Infinite Earths, okay, the multiverse spews out, and then you get Crisis and Infinite Earths, and it kind of brings it all back to one timeline, and then it all starts to open up again, and then you have Identity Crisis followed by Infinite Crisis followed by Final Crisis, and you're like, oh, the crises are over, and then suddenly you have like Dark Knights of Metal and like all these things, and then it jumps into like I want to say Dark Crisis. I think that's what it was, which I haven't read yet, but you see what I'm saying? Like when you have these sprawling events and then they bring them back together and they kind of tie everything, I have a feeling when I get to that stuff, when I get to the farther down the line, when you're dealing with the Dark Knights of Metal, the Batman Who Laughs, that area, I think that's where I might see some stuff where my brain's going to go, hold on, is that how it was? Cause that stuff's not as fresh in my mind as some of the older stuff. And I only say that because I've reread several pieces of the older stuff where some of this newer stuff, I'm one, a little behind on, and two, it hasn't sunk in the way some of the older stuff has. So, right.
Sure. I'm kind of curious if this mini series would even go through like Dark Knight's Metal and stuff like that. But,
when you look at like DC, New 52 and then Rebirth and then Dawn of the DC, which is what they're on now. Yeah. It really is kind of like get everyone caught up to where they are now. So
I see.
That's why I think like some of that stuff's going to have to get covered to a degree, even if it's a quick little blurb, like, by the way, this happened, because the two issues that I've read, that's exactly what they've done. It was kind of like, oh, by the way, this happened. And you're just like, yeah, that's right, that did happen. And then you move on to the next thing, you know.
So it's almost like a jumping on point, almost, like for people
who I feel like it's setting up a jumping on point.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty neat.
Yeah. Just a thought. But yeah, we'll see. But that's it for me in terms of watching, reading, that kind of stuff. You want to talk about the news? We don't have a lot.
Yeah, let's go for it.
Okay. First news piece, let's talk about Fallout, the TV show. Fallout, the TV show, has made so... Actually, yeah, Fallout, the TV show, has made so much... money and waves for Amazon, that Amazon has officially said, we're going to make some more video game stuff. And they finally greenlit BioWare's Mass Effect television show for Amazon. Did you ever play the Mass Effect games?
No, I haven't played the games. Okay. I know a bit about them. I remember kind of following like their coverage a lot. I've never played the games myself, but these games came out at a time where I just wasn't playing video games at all. Like, I kind of just adopted the, if I'm going to play video games, I might as well be like doing artwork is kind of where I was in life.
Sure.
So yeah, enlighten me though.
Well, I played the first two. I didn't play beyond that. And I heard not so great things about Mass Effect 3. And I've had friends tell me that, like, hey, 2 ended great. You don't have to continue going if you don't want to. And I'm like, that's a weird sentence. And then they kind of explained to me that they weren't fans of 3 and direction that went and all that stuff. I'm like, okay, that's fine. Well, I played the first two. I really liked the first one enough to play the second one. The second one is probably one of the greatest video games I've ever played. It would definitely be, I don't know if I'd be top 5, but it would definitely fall in a top 10, maybe top 20 category if someone said, what are your favorite video games of all time? It's literally one of the best in terms of gameplay, mechanics, story. It's a role-playing game. So in terms of like the role-playing elements and stuff, it's literally like, it's amazing. And then throw in the emotional attachments because the way everything plays, it plays very much like a movie. So yeah, you have your battles and all that stuff and you play a video game, but then you get to the cutscenes, which are so in depth in terms of like movie level storytelling. It's just fantastic. So if Amazon's going to tackle this, this is going to be great. I look forward to it because Fallout showed how well you can do things. Fallout and The Last of Us said, hey, we're going to take these video games legit seriously and we're going to tell these amazing stories and they're turning out great. They're awesome. We're going to be, I know I say this like I'm really excited, but they announced that they've greenlit the show, but it doesn't go in front of cameras until Q4 of 2026. So we got a little bit of waiting. And as we learn things, obviously no fan left behind. We will let you all know when we know things. So I thought that was really cool.
Comments?
Yep. Okay.
Super exciting. I think it's one of those games that people have wanted some sort of like live action, whether it's movie or TV show treatment for a long time. So I think that's super exciting. But again, it is like you said, it's a long wait. But also you can't rush art. And I feel like that's kind of the world we're living in. Like, you know, people online are talking about between Peacemaker season 1 and Peacemaker season 2, we had 3 years. And just look at how much time we have between like Stranger Things seasons and stuff like that. And it's kind of annoying. You know, it's kind of sometimes hard to remember the events of season 1 once the second season finally drops. But also we're getting like movie quality TV shows. And so that is that's the price you pay for like movie quality TV shows when it comes to the production value, the budget, the special effects, stuff like that. So I mean, it is what it is. We have to wait for things, but again, you can't rush art. So good stuff.
Yeah, certainly not. Also on the video game front, Netflix animated series Splinter Cell is coming very soon. I forgot to mention it to you, Peter. First off, I'm a big Splinter Cell fan. It's one of my favorite of the stealth series, Tom Clancy's Splinter Cell. But the trailer for the animated show dropped, and it looks great.
Oh, cool.
That's really all I can say. It's a trailer for an animated show. It looks fantastic. Looks like they're going with the older Sam Fisher as opposed to the younger one, which that's cool. But I like Splinter Cell. Looks cool. Yeah, I'm excited for it. So,
what style of animation is it?
Very similar to like the Castlevania series and like those, just that kind of level of animation. So
yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I love like the 2D like anime style is pretty cool for like more of a, you know, kind of like more of a spy like espionage sort of thing like Splinter Cell or covert ops. I don't know the best way to phrase it. But that's like a really cool vibe for that kind of story. I just didn't know since Splinter Cell's like feels so sleek and high tech. I didn't know if it would be more of a CG style thing, but no, sounds awesome.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about Superman for a minute. Since we were talking about Peacemaker and stuff earlier, Superman James Gunn confirms he's already finished the Superman sequel, which that sounds cool. Like, that clearly not gone in front of cameras because they just dropped that movie, but at least the script for it, right?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask.
Yeah, because we're just like, yeah, give it to us.
Yeah.
Don't wait, just give it to us. but he said that his Superman saga should have 4 films. This I wasn't expecting. I definitely was expecting at least 3, but I was expecting, hey, here's Superman, we're going to do a couple things, here's Superman 2, a couple things, here's Superman 3, a couple things, but I wasn't expecting 4. I think that's awesome. You being the Superman fan, any thoughts on this?
I have questions, but definitely really good news. My only questions is, if it's going to be a 4 film saga, like he said, are all of those films like Superman solo films, you know, or is like Supergirl, is that considered part of his Superman saga? That would be my big question, you know.
Yeah,
are
they
gonna
what have if
like or, you know, are they going to have like a Superboy film or something like that, you know? So that's my big question, but definitely awesome to hear as a Superman fan.
He's going to build the super family.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Right. That's what I was thinking, the exact same thing. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. And I'm excited for more. I'm also, did you see that Tyler Hoechlin from Superman and Lois, the guy who plays Superman, has expressed interest in playing Batman for the DCU?
Yeah, I did see that. I thought that was pretty interesting.
It was. That doesn't mean he's cast. He expressed interest.
Keep going.
No, I was just going to say that when I see stories like that, like this actor says it'd be fun to play this character, I always skirt over those. I never want to report those on the show because I'm always worried that someone's going to take that going, oh, this person's playing this character. No, that's not what that means at all. It means that an actor said, I think it'd be really fun to be Batman, or I think it'd be really fun to play Luke Skywalker. That's not what, you know what I mean? Like, I'm always worried that someone's going to like take it out of face value, you know?
So, yeah.
Anyway, you were saying.
No, I think his performance on the CW as Superman was like really, really awesome. And he's one of those actors that on paper, he looks like Superman, but there is something about him. Like, I don't know if it's something about his bone structure where I'm just like, I don't know if he's quite Superman. Like, I love him in this role, but it's just something about like his facial features feel like slightly off. And so it like makes me wonder, would he look better to me in the Batman mask? And again, this has nothing to do with his performance. I think he's a great actor. And I really loved like how much he wore his passion for Superman on his sleeve when he was on Superman and Lois and Supergirl. But yeah, just something about it. I'm like, maybe I wonder what he would actually look like in a Batman cowl. And that actually might look pretty cool. But I also kind of wonder, has there ever been an actor who's played one of, you know, either Batman or Superman and then went on to wear the costume in something else?
Ooh.
Like wearing the other character's costume, you know what I mean?
Ben Affleck.
Yeah, you're right. But as I was saying it, I was like, Ben Affleck would be the only one.
He'd be the only one because he played George Reeve in the movie Hollywoodland, which was like ultimately a biopic about George Reeve, who was the original TV Superman. And so there's several scenes of him being Superman on set, because he's Superman in the TV show. And then he would then later become Batman and obviously in the Snyderverse. So he'd be the only one that I could think of that has done that.
Yeah, it's making me like kind of curious, you know. There's got to be some Batman actor who dressed as Superman on Saturday Night Live or something. It has to have happened in another point, but no, that's very interesting. Ben Affleck must be the only person who's done it before him, but yeah, maybe Tyler Hoechlin.
It's the only one I can think. It's the only one that I can think of. How about that?
Yeah.
So. All right. Let's talk. We got one more news story and then we can move on to tonight's list. See, not a lot of stuff. Have you ever heard of the game Sword World? This is a tabletop role-playing game. Have you ever heard of this?
You know, I feel like because of all the news with Critical Role and, you know, whether it's Daggerheart or like the fact that their new season's going to be Dungeons and Dragons, I feel like a lot of role-playing stuff is coming onto my feed, just like on social media, like my algorithms.
Well, that's because we're talking about it and your phone is listening.
That could be it too. So I think and I the have
Alexa,
heard of this.
And the Alexas in your house and all that stuff, they're all listening.
So I think I have heard of this game, but it was within like the last week and a half or something like that. Okay. So I don't know the game, but I recently have heard about it. But yeah, as you were saying.
Okay, because I didn't know anything about this game. Yeah. I didn't even know this thing existed. Turns out Dungeons & Dragons releases in the 70s, becomes this big cultural phenomenon. You get into the 80s, the Satanic Panic, all that stuff. And a group of players in Japan start playing Dungeons & Dragons, and they think it's really cool. So they start building in their own campaign, and they end up doing world building because they're doing homebrews, right? They're not using the Dungeons & Dragons stuff. They're kind of doing their own thing. They created a homebrew system based on the Dungeons & Dragons, like, mechanics, reached out to Dungeons and Dragons and said, hey, we'd like to collaborate. Maybe we can like bring our world into yours and like maybe release a book to say, hey, here's this other facet and you guys could try it out. And yeah. Dungeons and Dragons in the 80s said no. So these guys created, they went, all right, well, we'll just do our thing. And they took theirs and created Sword World. Sword World outsells Dungeons and Dragons on a scale that I didn't realize. They've sold 10 million books of their original like system, which in first off, that dwarfs all sales in Japan. I don't know if that dwarfs all sales like globally for Dungeons and Dragons, but it's referred to as the Dungeons and Dragons killer, which I think is crazy. But so, and the catch with this whole thing is you could only get this game in Japan.
Sure.
It's a long running tabletop role playing game created by group SNE and originally published by Fujimi Shobo, if I'm saying that right. First released in 89, it uses a unique 2D6 based system and known for its accessibility, structured progression, and emphasis on teamwork and storytelling. Over the 35 years, check this out. It has become the foundational title in Japanese tabletop gaming, inspiring novels, anime, and video game adaptations. Now, where we all have talked about how, you and I have talked about how we think Final Fantasy was very heavily predicated off the rules of Dungeons and Dragons, I wonder if it's the other way around. And Final Fantasy was pulling source and thoughts and inspiration from Sword World and not Dungeons and Dragons. Hearing that, and it also makes me question anime that I've watched and some movies and stuff because of the influence, right? The reason I'm bringing this up and the reason this kind of got flagged as a story is because now it's only been available in Japan until now. Very soon, and I don't have a date yet because I've been kind of looking for it, but it will be released in the United States very shortly. So I'm really kind of curious to see how that plays once it gets released over here. If you go to swordworldrpg.com, you can get the free intro adventure PDF and kind of get a glimpse of the mechanics, and take a look at it. But the actual book will be releasing over here in the United States very soon. So thoughts?
Yeah, it's super interesting. I feel like there's a real demand for tabletop RPG stuff right now. And so I don't know what publisher like in the US is bringing this game over. Like who was like, you know, we could probably localize this, you know, translate it, bring it over here, and it could be just a direct competitor to D&D. But no, really interesting stuff. It'll be really exciting to see like people's reactions to this and like hearing kind of reviews, you know, checking out like on YouTube, like people's reviews of like how this game compares to D&D and stuff like that. But pretty much everything you just said, I wasn't aware of, but it's also like none of it none of it really surprised me. I feel like Japan is like super well known for having like I know so much about this just from like being a fan of like manga and stuff, but like Japan has such a thriving book like culture. So like the idea of like this like, you know, text-based tabletop RPG, like the books just like selling like mad over there, like does not surprise me. It doesn't surprise me that they would build their own sort of like D&D rival over there. It's really exciting in kind of like a weird way. Like this is going to be released over here. Let's see how this shakes things up. But no, just really cool stuff. But again, like absolutely none of that surprised me, even though I just wasn't even really aware of it. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Do you have any like hopes or comments on this, or where are you?
No, it makes me question animes I've watched, books I've read, movies I've seen, video games I've played. It really does. Where just that turn-based RPG element, and we all like, yeah, it's very similar to like a Dungeons and Dragons, obviously influence. And it makes me go, oh no, it's not. They were all like, we're going to base Final Fantasy off Sword World and build from there. You know what I mean? That's the thing that kind of blows my mind a little bit. So.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I can also see how like the people who created Sword World got the main concept from D&D and then kind of built off that and made their own thing. So it's kind of a weird thing. Like everything influences each other, and you can trace the lineage back from different things. So like maybe Final Fantasy was originally influenced by Sword World, but you know, Sword World was influenced by D&D, and D&D was influenced by like a handful of other stuff. So it's super interesting when you get into all that stuff. But no, I just think this is a really fun story. Do you think you're going to be picking up a copy, or are you going to give this game a try?
Maybe I'll kind of, I think I want to like see what people got to say about it before I get all excited and jump on. How about that? So
right on.
All right, man, that brings us to the end of the news. You want to talk about tonight's list?
Yeah, let's go for it.
All right, everyone, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Now for the top five.
All right. This week was my pick. I realized for some reason, now this is one of those things where sometimes you have an idea list and you write it down and you know you're going to come back to it later. And this is one of those where I thought about it a long time ago. We never did it. Didn't realize we never did it. Had to consult the list to make sure we didn't actually do it and then bring it up to you. Yeah. So what we're talking about tonight is space battles. Now, the reason this comes up is because I've been kind of falling asleep to Stargate, and it's all science fiction, outer space stuff, right? So I'm having a blast with it. It's kind of becoming a bit of a comfort show. It always has been, but it's kind of like, it's been kind of nice to rewatch a little. And so, which is great, but it's making me realize we never talked about space battles. Now, this is where I found this list interesting. Star Wars really cornered the world when it comes to space battles, right? They kind of showed us what space battles could be. Not that because we had Star Trek prior to, and they did some cool stuff for sure. I'm not knocking Star Trek, but Star Wars went, hey, we're going to turn it up to 11. It's going to have space fighters, and it's going to be super high, intense, high energy, fast moving, you know, World War II type dogfights and that kind of thing. And that's exactly what they gave us. And then we went, oh, that's how you make a space movie. And then all these people started making space movies. When I started looking this up, when I pitched the list last week, I was like, we're going to be talking a lot about Star Wars. What I did not expect was me to look this up and then dig into the pantheon of like space things that I've watched and things that I've enjoyed and the things that I think are the best, and then go, wow, we're talking about the big franchises a lot tonight. because my list, I tried to not do all Star Wars, but I do have Star Wars stuff on my list for sure. I did make sure I got some Star Trek in there, that kind of thing, just because I was trying to, yes, I wanted to make this going, these are my favorites, but I also was like, let's like not just make the whole list Star Wars, you know? I will say, before I let you tackle this, I will say that I don't think there's enough space battle stuff in Star Wars. I think in the original trilogy, they did a whole bunch of space stuff. Battle Yavin, Battle Endor, Death Star 2, Han Solo getting chased around by TIE fighters and Empire Strikes Back. They did a lot of space within those original trilogy stuff. When it got to the prequels, they had a couple space stuff, but most of it was ground-based combat and story. And then you got to the sequels, and then the space stuff was so fast, you couldn't see anything. That's my personal opinion. Like, that final battle in episode 9, that was probably one of the biggest space battles they've ever done, and you couldn't see anything because they shot everything so tight, and then it was like blink and you miss it. They had new TIE fighters that you barely got to look at because they were never on screen. Like, they were on screen and they'd explode, and you'd be like, well, that was, oh, I guess that's not cool. Like, I didn't get a chance to look at the ship. It's weird. And I fully blame J.J. Abrams for that. Building intensity, I get, but Star Wars fans like the cool vehicles. We do. We want to see that stuff. So I feel like they didn't. I feel like they missed the mark there. But yeah, like this. Yeah, I just thought it was interesting how I think Star Wars doesn't have enough space battles, but then you run into stuff like Star Trek, and it's like a lot of space battles. You know what I mean? So, how do you tackle this?
Yeah, you said a lot there.
Sorry, I just kind of rambled.
No. Yeah. It's all good. You kept saying stuff, and I'm like, I want to comment on that, but I don't know if I'll remember it. But I was definitely running into the same thing. In all honesty, I feel like my list maybe should be almost all Star Wars. That's the problem I was running into. Like, I was like, Star Wars has all my favorite space battles. You know, there's other franchises, other movies, whatever, that have good space battles. But when it comes down to it, I feel like Star Wars did such a good job of exploiting, like, space battles as an art form. I feel like the statement that Star Wars needs more space battles is kind of funny, to be honest. But I can see what you're saying, especially with the sequel trilogy. Like, the space battles are very... I think the sequel trilogy did a lot of, like... keeping everything to the point, you know, like the lightsaber fights, they were cool, but they weren't going to, they're not going to last as long as like the lightsaber fight at the end of the Phantom Menace. Kind of the same thing with the space battles. They're going to be a little flashy. They're going to be fun. They're not going to be super long or drawn out, which is good from a storytelling standpoint, but there's also a level where you're like, well, I just want more cool space stuff. So I did struggle with, I didn't want to keep my list all space battle stuff, all Star Wars stuff, but I did pick a few of my favorites for my list as far as Star Wars scenes go. But yeah, otherwise, I thought this was kind of a fun one to put together. I feel like I've got a couple classics. I have a couple ones that I kind of consider cheats, but I saved those for my honorable mentions. But yeah, I don't know if I have too many comments on it. I don't know if you want to jump in or if you had any
more. Yeah, we can, because all our comments are going to come. I have only one honorable mention tonight.
Okay, so I have two, so I'm probably going to have to go twice, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
No worries. I'll get it started. So yeah, my first one feels like kind of a cheat. I went with kind of the whole battle at the end of Independence Day, right? Because half of that takes place like within the Earth's atmosphere. You know, you have the Air Force, you have the military, you have all these volunteer pilots and stuff. They're all fighting off the aliens, and it's like this amazing dogfight, but it's all right by the Earth. But that's also, you know, they flash between that and the whole sequence with, you know, you have Will Smith and Jeff Goldblum flying an alien spacecraft into the mothership, hacking into the mothership, like putting a virus in the ship. And you have the whole chase scene with them getting out of the mothership. And that has some cool space battle elements, too. You know, their ship going and then other alien ships chasing them down. The rush to try to get out of the ship before the doors close. The giant explosion. And then how that factors into the dogfight that's going on right above Earth. So the reason this one feels like a cheat is that it does, like, a ton of the action takes place right above Earth, but there are those cool space elements I was just mentioning. But it's also, like, when it comes to just spacecraft battle, this is one of my favorite scenes like that of all time, so that's why it made an honorable mention for me. So that's my first one.
Cool. What's your second one? I'm with you on that, by the way, and I understand why you made it, because it's way more of a Earth atmosphere kind of a battle than it is outer space.
Yeah, but then there's also, like, the space parts where you're like, well, maybe it counts, I don't really know. The other one I went with, and this one I also feel like is a cheat, because it's not really, like, most of this battle doesn't take place in space, but it kind of does, and that is the whole Nowhere sequence from the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie.
Okay.
I really loved that whole sequence. I love the concept of this floating celestial skull in space and the fact that people inhabited it and turned it into this sort of like spaceport. This is a great scene. This is where you see the Guardians. They meet up with the Collector. You get a lot of Infinity Stone history and context in this scene. There's a whole part where Drax has like a fight with I think it's Ronan. So you have that cool aspect. I was going to say Thanos, and I was like, well, no, I think it was Ronan at that part. But then there's also like a really awesome chase scene and fight scene with the spacecrafts flying through all the ins and outs of Nowhere. And, you know, you have like Rocket Raccoon is taking out like Ronan's ships, like left and right. And the whole thing ends with you end up having Gamora floating into space and Star-Lord having to go out and rescue her. And there's a big mix of like so many different kinds of fight scenes, like all in this one sequence. But this one's kind of a cheat because it is inside of a spaceport, but it's also kind of is a space battle. So that's why I saved it for an honorable mention. But I always really, really enjoyed this one too. So there you go.
Yeah, I hear you, man. Good call, but I hear you why you have it where you have it. Yeah. The honorable mention I have is Star Wars Rogue One, Battle of Scarif. The reason this makes an honorable mention, and you'll understand, is because I really feel like the majority of it is in atmosphere or on the ground Battle of Scarif.
Yeah.
It all starts out in space, and the space stuff is awesome with the fighters like attacking the shield. Generator shield opening, whatever you want to call it, with the capital ships in their battle, and then all the battle dogfight stuff around. But then once they penetrate that shield opening, it becomes more in atmosphere and on the ground fighting than anything else. So even though it's probably some of the best Star Wars dogfight crazy space battle stuff that we've ever seen, it transitions real fast onto the ground. And then it becomes more of a on the planet battle. That's the only reason it's an honorable mention, is because it shifts gears pretty quickly. But yeah, amazing, amazing Star Wars effects and battle sequence. So yeah.
Awesome.
Any thoughts on that one or no?
No, yeah, it's hard to add to it, but you are right. The whole like battle to like get inside the shield and stuff is like pretty freaking cool. I always felt like they almost took a page from Spaceballs book with that concept. But no, that was really awesome. And no, this is a great scene, but kind of, I guess, similar to my honorable mentions, it does have that sort of like more like ground level dogfight aspect to it. So I see why you
put it just shifts gears really quick. That's all. All right. Your first actual pick of the night.
Yeah, I'll stick with Star Wars stuff. I'll probably pick my most controversial Star Wars pick.
I do expect you and I are going to match a bunch when it comes to Star Wars related, so.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I think maybe for my other two, I'm not sure about this one. And that's why I said, like, this one might be a more controversial pick, just because it's not as, it's not one of the most beloved Star Wars movies. But I actually went with The Battle of Dakar, which is the battle that's basically at the beginning of The Last Jedi. So yes, like, there's a lot of people who don't like this movie. I actually do like The Last Jedi. I'm not going to say it's perfect. I'm not going to say there's nothing I would change about the movie, but I do think the movie delivered in certain ways, and that's a whole conversation for a different day. But I always really loved this battle. Like, The Last Jedi feels like it picks up right after The Force Awakens. Like, it's, like, right after, you know, like, the Resistance destroys Starkiller Base. So now it's the First Order finds the Resistance base, and they're like basically bombing this Resistance hideout on this planet of Dakar. And so it's like the fight, like everybody who can escape the base does, and there's a huge fight in the, you know, right outside this planet at the very beginning of this movie. It's such an intense scene. And I think it's a really great scene. You have a lot of like funny antics with Poe Dameron, especially when it's kind of like, it's Poe and like this small starfighter facing off against like, you know, the dreadnought, which is essentially this massive Star Destroyer thing. And there's a lot of really funny moments with that. But also like later on in the scene when they bring out the bomber ships, like the Resistance bomber ships, I always thought those were really cool. I really love the concept of like these ships that are built literally just to drop bombs on things, and like the design of them is very striking. And I also like the idea of, you know, an object that is in motion stays in motion. So if within those bomber ships the bombs drop and there's simulated gravity, once those bombs entered space, they would still go the same direction they were going. And I don't know if that's actually the science behind it. I haven't read like the Last Jedi tech manual, for example, but that's always how I understood that concept. And I always really liked it. I thought it was like a really striking, interesting sort of warfare that we hadn't really seen in Star Wars. So I really enjoyed the scene. Again, I know there's a ton of haters of this movie though, but yeah, that's my first pick.
We're not here to talk about divisive Star Wars things, but I will say I do agree with you. I liked Jedi, and I will say that that opening sequence was phenomenal. I don't think anyone can argue that opening battle sequence wasn't cool.
Absolutely.
It was such a fantastic battle sequence. Those bombers were awesome. I really thought those bombers, one, I really liked the bombers, the physical look of them, the way they worked. Yeah. I was kind of bummed the way they all kind of basically, they go down pretty quick, but they were cool bombers. I really liked the Dreadnought. I thought that was an awesome Star Destroyer design. It was really cool looking. But dude, just the dogfight stuff alone, Poe and his X-Wing, we got to see an X-Wing do a power slide. I mean, come on, man. And that was an idea that you can do that with an X-Wing. That's awesome. Of course you can. Yeah. It's fantasy. But at the same time, like, we had never thought about that. You know, it was just a really cool sequence. I love that battle. That's a great, and it's a great way to open a Star Wars movie too. Like, just hit it. There you go. You know. So
yeah, and I also like that the bombers, like that is like, they do feel kind of like how you said earlier, like Star Wars has, it's almost like World War II dogfights in space. And I feel like the bombers kind of fit into that sort of aesthetic. They're kind of like this big clunky, like, I don't know, like World War II looking thing, but they just exist in this futuristic space fight. So yeah, awesome stuff. But what do you got next for us?
All right, so my first actual pick of the evening is Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan. Nice. The end battle, the Enterprise versus the Reliant. Now this is Captain Kirk and his crew on the Enterprise, and they're battling Khan and his crew on the Reliant that they've taken over, and they're battling in the Nebula. I don't remember the name of the Nebula, so please don't chastise me for that. But I will say, this battle was cool because there's not a lot of shooting. There's not a lot of like crazy maneuvers, starfighter stuff. This is more like submarine warfare because they can't see each other. And it's like the captain's playing a chess game. So, and the intensity is slowly building and building and building. And then then they get to the point where it's time to actually like start firing at each other. But it becomes that chess game match of the submarine warfare, which you see in a lot of other, like when you look at like submarine movies, like Hunt for Red October and that kind of thing, you get those intense, you know, things. And here's these people are like in this nebula where they can't see the other ship. Sensors aren't working right. They're kind of like trying to find each other, and then boom, take the shot. Like it's intense. It's probably one of the more famous space battle sequences, but I always really liked it. So yeah, Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan.
Yeah, awesome stuff. I like that you commented on this being more like a chess game, where which with Star Trek, I feel like for the most part, I always felt like most of their space battles felt more like a chess game. That's actually like when I was a kid, I used to hate Star Trek because I always thought the space battles were so boring. Because, you know, you're like 5 years old and you're like, I just want to see X-Wings flying around and like kicking ass and stuff. And Star Trek felt a lot more like turn-based. I actually feel like if I revisited a lot of Star Trek now, I might like it more. Obviously, you can tell I'm not the biggest Star Trek fan, but I do feel like, and I don't know if you would agree, is this one of the kind of the considered one of the better just space battles in general for Star Trek?
It's one of the most famous space battles for Star Trek. In terms of better, the only thing that I see an issue with it is that the special effects definitely don't age as well comparatively. You know what I mean? Like the movie's great and the whole scene's great. And if you have no problem with older films, like if you're a younger viewer and you're just like, wow, those special effects are not the greatest, that might make you turn away just because of the old style of filmmaking. But I think it holds up, but that's because I also grew up with it. So I'm just like, yeah, that's what it looks like, you know? So, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, absolutely. But good stuff. And I always felt like Star Trek was a very intellectual sort of franchise. So I feel like the space battles reflect that too, in that sort of chess game sort of sense. But yeah, I guess, if we're talking Star Trek, I actually don't have any Star Trek picks on my list, but, I did pick a Star Trek adjacent thing. I actually went with the movie Galaxy Quest. So the specific name for the space battle would be the Protector versus the, I'm going to screw up the pronunciation, but it's the Krak Vort, which is, Saris's ship. And, this one's weird because I feel like this is practically like the entire like third act of the movie is kind of this one space battle. You know, there's chase scene parts, there's the part where you know they end up like flying through the minefield, like the alien ship is chasing them through the minefield. You know, that ends up damaging the Protector's, like, you know, like its core. So that ends up leading to this whole self-destruction sequence. There's parts where the aliens, like Saris and his crew, come onto the human ship or the Protector. There's just so many good parts of it, but it's really like almost like the full second half of the movie is like this one big fight scene. But it's one of those things where it's like, this battle has everything you want. It has the hand-to-hand combat. It's got the weird, like, going through the ship, through, like, the weird underbellies of the ship to repair like, the ship's reactor. You've got the space, the out exterior, like, space battle stuff going on. I feel like the only thing that this sequence misses is there's not a lot of, like, smaller spacecraft, like, sort of dogfight sort of stuff. But everything else, like, this whole movie has, like, everything you would want for space battles, I feel. So that's why I picked this one, so.
Yeah, no, this is a... This kept popping up when I was Googling sequences and Galaxy Quest, and it's a very, I honestly think this is, they were trying to be very reminiscent of the Wrath of Khan, if you will, when they were doing Galaxy Quest, since it is so closely a Star Trek parody, or very Star Trek adjacent, if you will. But yeah, no, this is a cool battle sequence, and how it all pieces together. So yeah, this is another chess game style, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. But I feel like there is so much like action packed parts too, you know, like there's the chess game parts, but there's also like the big stupid action parts about this one, which is why I love it. But yeah, good stuff. I that's interesting that you compare it to the Wrath of Khan sequence you were just talking about. And I feel like structuring Galaxy Quest after Wrath of Khan is probably also like a smart thing that they could do, because I feel like Star Trek II is so well regarded, so it totally makes sense if you're making this sort of like parody homage film to Star Trek, it makes sense to take your cues from the most popular movie in that franchise, you know?
Yeah. All right, I'm going to throw back to the Star Wars realm of things, and I'm going to go with Revenge of the Sith, Episode 3, the Battle of Coruscant at the opening of the film.
Yes. Awesome. Awesome call.
This is a phenomenal space, all in space battle, if you will, until they get on the ship. But it's this is a nonstop action sequence that you want to talk about. Like, first off, we were pumped to go see this movie. Like, everybody was like, we got to see how Anakin becomes Darth Vader. Like, we know, but we got to see the actual fall. We got to see the put on the suit. Well, I don't think we were expecting was, I don't think we were expecting to open this way. You finish the crawl, the camera pans down, you get two starfighters flying, you get the music's amping up, and then you're flying over a Star Destroyer, and as they pitch around the corner, it's just boom, massive battle in sequence. Massive capital ships firing on capital ships. You have all the starfighters all over the place, the droid starfighters, the clone troopers, plus, you know, the clone fighters, plus the Jedi's in there. It's wildly entertaining. Just the amount of visuals. It's one of those battles that I have over the years in rewatching Revenge of the Sith tried to watch over and over and over again, like try to catch things. And I've rewound sequences of it, like just trying to look at like corners of the screen and like deep into pockets that I've never looked at before. And like, what's over there? What's over there? Like trying to see like all the stuff that's crammed into the images of that film. So much stuff. I love this from beginning to end. There's so much to it. So many moving parts. This was the first Star Wars movie where a ship exploded and you watched an individual expelled out of the cockpit and fly past the camera, like not in a ship. And I'm like, yeah. Whoa, never seen that before in Star Wars. Yeah, really cool. So I don't know. I know you got excited when I brought this up. I don't know if we matched or if you have comments on it, but.
No, we didn't match, but this was one I was highly thinking about including on my list. It's a great scene. This one honestly was like barely didn't make my list, but no, it's such a good scene. One of the things people talk about with this one too is like that, and you kind of were alluding to this, Drew, that opening shot is it's like a long continuous shot, and you know, a lot of it's CG, so it's not necessarily one of those things where, you know, there was like, the camera work was mostly like CG, so it's not like as far as like a, it's not like a long shot in a movie where, you know, there is people handing off the cameras to each other, but it still is like an impressive long shot when it comes to just the imagery and just cool storytelling and stuff like that. But this fight scene is it's really great. I love the part I can't remember what they're called, but like the little, like, they're almost like the little parasite droids that end up on, is it Anakin's ship at this part? And R2 kind of has to fight them off. I just thought that was like a good piece of comedic relief. But no, overall, just great scene. And I mean, I could be wrong. Correct me if I'm wrong. Was this the first time we saw General Grievous? Was that at the beginning of this scene? I couldn't remember if...
not at the, it's kind of like middle, like they finally get on the ship and you're just like, yeah. Yeah. I'm questioning the order of sequences before you actually see him on screen, but this is the battle where Grievous was attempting to kidnap Chancellor Palpatine from the planet. So yeah.
Well, I feel like it's pretty early on in the movie that you actually see Grievous. But this came out before the Clone Wars series, right? So I guess I was just saying, like, the introduction to General Grievous was also, like, within the scene, which is also a pretty epic aspect of it. But yeah, good stuff.
Sure. All right, man. What, that goes back to you, since we didn't
match. Yeah, so I'll shift away from Star Wars. I actually went with, this is a scene from a animated movie that I love. I've mentioned it a lot on the podcast. This is also one that actually comes up a lot when you Google like best space fight scenes. But I actually went with the scene at the end of Titan AE. So I guess the scene would be known as like the Valkyrie, which is kind of the main like good guy characters from Titan AE. That's their ship, the Valkyrie versus the Dredge. And Titan AE is basically about there's like a alien apocalypse, like this alien group called the Dredge comes to Earth and destroys the Earth. And there's small bits of humans that were able to escape before the Earth was blown up. And there's this spacecraft called the Titan that was launched out into space before the Earth blew up. they launched out this the spacecraft called the Titan, and within the Titan is everything you need to create a new planet, to make a new Earth that people can inhabit. So that's what the whole movie's about. And so you have these random bits of humans, and you have this main character, Kale, who's played by Matt Damon, and it's kind of like his story of finding the Titan and creating the new Earth. So they actually do eventually discover the Titan, and it's in like this sort of like, it's like inside of this sort of like ice asteroid thing, and it's kind of this race to activate the Titan while this dredge alien race is trying to destroy it. And the dredge, I always thought, had a really cool concept. They're kind of these aliens that are made of energy alone, so they look like these weird like blue like alien creature shaped things, but they're constantly like flickering, and they almost look like they have like electricity running through them or something. Very cool, like interesting design for those characters. But the whole sequence when they're like on this race to like, we have to activate this Titan, we have to activate the sequence that is going to recreate a planet for humans, while they're trying to do that, and you have these alien like energy based ships that are attacking them, you have like crazy dogfight sections where this the Valkyrie, like the main character's ship, they're like shooting off different dredge ships. It's like there's crazy dogfight stuff. There's a really cool sequence where you have Kale, who's that Matt Damon character I mentioned. He has to get in a space suit, and he's like outside of this giant Titan ship trying to like get inside so he can actually activate it. There's like a cool aspect where he is outside, super vulnerable, dredge ships are shooting at him, and then there's the other members of his crew have to fight him off. It's like a really exciting thing. And spoiler alert, they do activate the Titan, but also activating the Titan, you know, the energy rays, the energy that this Titan ship shoots out actually factors into destroying the big dredge ship that was fighting against them the whole time. So, yeah, great sequence. I love this movie. Like I said, I've talked about it a lot of times. I probably will again. I don't know if you have any thoughts on this one, Drew.
I think this movie's fantastic. I haven't seen this movie in a very long time, so I am not as familiar with that battle sequence as you are, which makes me want to go back and rewatch it. But I just remember really like, it's an animated film. It's 2D animated with like a mix of 3D animation. It's like the really nice blend between the two animation styles. And I remember when it came out, it's awesome. And bizarrely, it's got a really good soundtrack too, by the way. I really liked whatever that opening song was. I always really liked that anyway. But I just don't remember the end battle, that battle sequence. I do remember when they, you know, obviously they have to activate the device to create the planet and stuff, you know, like I remember that sequence. I just don't remember the battle part. But all the other space stuff that they did with that, with all the spaceships and everything, I always thought they were really cool. And those alien ships, the design of them, they had like that, had this, the alien ships, the dredge ships had like these really, or the fighters anyway, had that cool, like, claw look to them as they like, yeah, especially like when they're in atmosphere skimming the water and stuff. Really cool. So yeah, good call on this one. Right, and now on, I have to go rewatch Titan AE. So
everyone, yeah, should go rewatch Titan AE. But yeah, right. Good stuff.
All right, I'm gonna shift gears back to Star Trek for a minute. Star Trek has a lot of really cool ones, and I was thinking about the Borg and stuff like that, like, you know, the from Star Trek Next Generation, Best of Both Worlds, parts 1 and 2, where they have to battle the Borg with the entire fleet and stuff. But that battle actually takes place off screen. You only hear the dialogue from the combat, from the distress calls. And then when the Enterprise arrives, they're just in a sea of debris because the Borg just blew everything away. Like, so that didn't even, you didn't even get to watch it. But the one I'm actually going for my list is from Star Trek Deep Space Nine. It's a season 4 episode titled The Way of the Warrior. This is, if you don't know what Star Trek Deep Space Nine is, Deep Space Nine is a space station. And the crew on there, Commander Sisko and his crew, kind of man the station themselves. And then you have the inner goings of all the political diplomats and stuff like that. And they're kind of like a, they're kind of like the last checkpoint before the wormhole in the Dominion Galaxy and all that stuff. But it's a Cardassian space station that is under Federation control. And in this episode, the Klingon fleet tries to take over and invade the station. So this massive Klingon fleet just shows up on the doorstep of the battle of the Deep Space Nine station. And at some point the battle ensues. And what's interesting about this is these are capital ships. These are not starfighters. These are capital ships doing maneuvers like starfighters as they're flying in and out the intricacies and around the space station, trying to take things out as the station is trying to shoot back at them. And then you have the smaller ships trying to interweave. It's a really cool, it's for the time period, for that mid to late 90s time slot. This was a really cool battle that, in my opinion, still holds up in terms of the Star Trek type space battles. So I have a feeling you have not watched this episode, but I think this is a great one. So
yeah, I'm unfamiliar with this one, but yeah, sounds awesome. So yeah, good stuff.
Yeah. Anyway, what do you got for me for your second?
Yeah. So the rest of my list is all Star Wars all the time. Cool. So we'll see how that goes.
Cool.
I'm actually not sure what order I should go, but I think I'll go with the pick I probably should save for last. I'll go with that one next.
Okay.
So this one I say should go, I should save for last because I feel like this is such an iconic space battle. It's one of the first things that I think of when I think of space battle. And when you think about like Hollywood history, like movie industry history, I feel like this battle is such an important piece of cinema. And that is the Battle of Yavin, sorry. I think I was thinking about ramen noodles and it came out wrong. But yeah, the Battle of Yavin at the end of Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope. And this is basically the battle against the first Death Star. You know, you have a handful of rebels in like their X-Wings and stuff who are, you know, flying towards the Death Star, going through the Death Star trench. Awesome, like, dogfight parts where, you know, different X-Wings are fighting off TIE fighters. You know, the Death Star's guns are shooting at them all. It's very iconic imagery. This, again, like, I feel like in Hollywood history, the scene is a game changer. But it's also just super intense. Like, I think when you compare it to other Star Wars battles, like, this battle is very, it feels very streamlined. You know, it's a very, like, we have this mission, we're gonna go do it. It's not like some of the other movies where it's like spliced between like two or three other battles going on and stuff like that. It feels very streamlined, but I feel like that's part of what makes it feel iconic. It's perfect. It's like a perfect ending of the movie. Luke being able to use the Force to guide him to actually destroy the Death Star. That part was awesome too. And of course you have like Han swooping in at the end with the Millennium Falcon to help save the day. The scene has everything you want. It's just so iconic. It had to make my list. Drew, I know you love this one too, so I don't know if you have any thoughts, but that's my next pick.
Yeah, man. Here's the problem with this list is we talk about Star Wars so much.
Yeah.
That it's like, here we are. We're going to talk about it some more. No, man. I'm with you. This is the thing, and this is where I'm going to bounce on this a little bit because, yeah, you have these great moments of Luke using the Force for the first time, hearing Obi-Wan's voice, the roller coaster-esque ride of flying into the Death Star trench,
yeah.
You know, the cool quotable lines, Han Solo swooping at the end. Yeah, you have those cool moments. But this is the thing. This is the part of the film where Hollywood said, how the hell did you do that?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there were some great special effects. Everyone wanted to know how you make a lightsaber. Yeah, they want to know how you did that. Yeah, they're curious about the sound design. But this is the one where it's like, how the hell did you get those ships to move that way? How did you get the... And what it was is they weren't making the ships move that way. They were making the camera move that way. And they were getting these cool shots because they were moving the camera, not the ship. And that's the thing you don't think about. So that's that thing where, like, from the film industry moving forward, this is that one, this is the movie that kind of pushed the boundaries of this is how you make a space movie. And everyone went, whoa, how'd you do that? And then everyone started like kind of piggybacking. And that's the thing, that there's nothing wrong with using new camera techniques. Oh, that's how they did that. Cool. All right. That's how we should do that. It'll make the, it'll, you know, and that's how that happens. This is a great one, but this is that thing where it definitely moved the industry, and that's what's ultimately the most important, right? So.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it moved the industry, but also the story and the imagery and everything was also so iconic, and that's why we're still talking about the scene to this day. So, good stuff. What do you have next on your list?
I'm sticking with Star Wars, and this is the one we probably matched on. I'm not 100% sure, because I don't know what you're thinking on this, but I went with Return of the Jedi, Episode 6, Battle of Endor, the Battle of Death Star 2.
Yep, this is we matched on this one, so this is my final pick. But yeah, go ahead. This seems perfect. Awesome.
So this is that thing where if you think about it, the Battle of Death Star 1 and Battle of Death Star 2 are ultimately the same. It's just when they did Battle of Death Star 2, they're like, we're just gonna turn it up to 11. We're gonna put so many more spaceships. We're going to add in, oh, hey, you're going to have an ambush of spaceships. We're going to have all the starfighters. You're going to have all the like capital ships. It's going to be like a complete cluster of spaceships around. And then you're going to have the Death Star. And then instead of doing a trench run, we're going to go into the Death Star and we're going to fly into the mechanics and stuff. Amazing what they were doing there. What's interesting is that this is one that kind of splits, you know, ground versus space, but so much of it's in space. And you get clear looks. You get to see the TIE fighters. You get to see the X-Wings. You get clear look at the Falcon. You have all the cockpit stuff where they're like, you know, screaming orders and yelling at people and saying it's a trap and like move the ship here and do this and playing the chess game. It's a little bit of like all the different facets that you want in something like this. Some of my favorite shots are like watching the ships spin around each other or the TIE fighters all coming straight at the screen. Watching them getting like flying in and out of the spaces of the like crevices of the Star Destroyers and then looping out and like coming up and like taking out another starfighter. This is one that's, it's just awesome. And you're just excited the whole time you're watching this. I know it's Star Wars and we can be talking about this forever, but do you have like, what did you want to say about it?
Yeah, it's hard to add, but I do like that you commented on, like, it never lets up. Like, this scene is so intense, and you have, like, the craziest, like, as far as, like, when the Star Wars movies were releasing, this is the craziest space battle we had seen thus far. Like, this is an insane space battle. If you go back and, like, rewatch this, like, some of those shots in this battle are so beautiful with, like, you have the Falcon zooming in and out, you have different spacecrafts, TIE fighters, everything just dogfighting, and the whole time you have like the Death Star looming in the background. The whole thing you're saying about like, oh, the first movie we went into a trench, well, now you have to actually fly through the Death Star. So freaking cool. Right. So badass. But also like the whole aspect with like what you're saying, like there's a lot of fighting on the ground. You know, you have this weird like stormtrooper versus Ewoks thing going on this nearby moon, you know, and then you have this outdoor or the external space like battle scene, and then you also have the whole lightsaber fight between like Luke and Vader, and then eventually, you know, the confrontation with the Emperor. So good, like such an epic ending to a trilogy, and of all of Star Wars, I think this is my favorite space fight scene. Like, there's so many good ones. I feel like every Star Wars movie has one or two like really good space fight scenes, but the Battle of Endor, this has always been my favorite. Like, it's so intense, it's so epic. It just doesn't get better than this. And here's where you go, well, actually my last pick is much better than this, because
no, it's you really don't get much better than the Battle of Endor. It's such a cool sequence. But what ends up happening is, like, just based on this, because I was trying to figure out what I was going to do for the order, and this is probably Battle of Endor was originally going to be like the one that I saved for the last. But then as we were talking, I was like, no, the one I'm going to save for last is the one that made me think of this list.
Fair enough.
You know what I mean? So I'm going with Stargate Atlantis. Now, I know that you have not seen any of the Stargate stuff short of the original film. So you definitely did not watch Stargate Atlantis when that show started. But because I'm like kind of falling asleep to Stargate right now, there's an episode in season 4 of Stargate Atlantis titled Be All My Sins Remembered. Ultimately, what's going on at this point in the series is that you have several factions in terms of the space faring races that you're dealing with. You have your humans, you have your Wraith, you have your replicators, you have your travelers and all this stuff. Well, one of the factions is becoming a very serious problem for everybody. It's becoming that common enemy kind of situation. And there's like that olive branch that gets, hey, we need to talk about this because this is a problem, not just for us, but for everybody. Because once they deal with us, they're going to turn and they're going to wipe you out after we're gone and that kind of thing. So we need to pool our resources and go after these guys together. So a plan gets formulated and they go. And it's multiple, and it's like that alliance of like all these different factions and all these different ships kind of lining up together. And this is that thing where when we talk about space battles and when you Google famous space battles, Stargate does not come up at all. And there's actually a lot of space stuff. And I just thought it was interesting because it's just this massively crazy, all these, like, you have the little starfighters, you have the big capital ships, crazy explosions, really amazing visuals, because it still holds up in terms of like modern day filmmaking and CGI and stuff. And like, yes, there's some comedic moments in there because, you know, you got to drop a line of humor every now and then, but ultimately, like, it's intense and it's absolutely insane. And I'm watching the sequence going, why doesn't Stargate get more praise? You know, like, I feel like it's like a forgotten franchise, if you will, when you compare it to all the other bigger ones. But just the whole battle sequence, I'm watching it, I'm like, we have to do a list about space battles. So and that's when I started digging in, like, have we actually talked about this before? But it's nuts. And then the battle ends and then they're like, we'll meet, they have a rendezvous point so they can debrief. And like, not everyone shows up at the rendezvous point because some of them are like, nope, battle's over, we're not dealing with you guys anymore, we're back to being enemies, and they take off. You know, that's what's really cool about it, is that that line in the sand, if you will. So,
yeah. Yeah, sounds awesome. I think it's interesting, like, you're just commenting about how you have Stargate, which is like, you know, this beloved franchise, but it hasn't really been in the limelight for a while. And it is interesting that I feel like Stargate doesn't get as much attention as like some of the other space franchises. And like, I haven't seen this one, so I'm part of the problem. But that is pretty interesting.
No. It's all good, man. You haven't watched it. It's Stargate's a commitment if you were to go through. I just think it's interesting when we talk about, you know, the space science fiction media, it's always Star Wars and Star Trek, and then you throw in some of the other ones, like, you know. But
yeah, it's interesting because I feel like there's certain franchises that just last, like, stand the test of time, like Star Trek or Star Wars are great examples. Or if you go over to like the superhero realm of things, like Batman, like, is always popular, you know. But then there's always these shows in the past that some of them get forgotten about, and it doesn't mean that they're bad shows, you know. It's almost more like, no, this is something that's great that more people should be talking about and paying attention to. And I guess that's kind of that's one of the things, like, we can try to do on our show, is highlight some of that old stuff that, you know, people might have skipped or forgotten about or whatever it is, you know.
Yeah, I'm totally with you there. That does bring us to the end of this list. I don't know, what are we talking about next week, Peter? It's your pick.
Yeah, so I think this is going to be a fun list. This one is going to be very weird and random, but I'm pretty excited about it. Because I was thinking about fan casts, right? Right now, because we don't really know who's going to be Batman in the DCU, there's a lot of Batman fan cast rumors going around, you know, like, this person's going to play Batman. No, this person's going to be. And for all we know, it could still end up being Robert Pattinson, as far as everything we know, you know. It's all just rumors. But I thought it would be kind of fun to talk about our top five, like, fantasy fan casts. So it's one of those things where, like, maybe there's a character you love from a comic book or a cartoon or video game or wherever it is. If that character was cast in live action, what actor would you want to see that play that role? And so this one can be all over the place, but I kind of thought this would be a fun topic. And I hope this isn't too much of a giant ocean to dive into, Drew, as far as like narrowing down your choices.
It's a huge ocean, but hey, I'm down. I was just about to ask you, I'm glad you answered the question, just about to say, is anything count? Like, you know what I mean? If there was like, not that we want more live action Disney films, but if I was like, oh, hey, this person totally be amazing as this character. You know what I mean? Yeah. Am I allowed to dig in? Because I was concerned you were going to say like strictly to like the superhero stuff, which is so difficult because.
Oh, yes.
How many movies have been made. But yeah, fan cast. Yeah, I'm totally with you.
Yeah, superheroes would be very hard because of how much like those movies are prevalent. But if there is like a character who hasn't been represented in film for like a really long time, like you could, you know, choose one of those. But if you want to choose like old Game Boy game characters or yeah, like you said, like animated Disney stuff, like anything you want to do, let's just get a random ragtag group of characters. And it's kind of more just like, who are the characters you would want to see in live action? And then just take like, okay, so which actor could play those characters? I just think it's a fun idea for a conversation. So,
sure. All right. Well, that kind of brings us to the end of this episode. I'm excited to talk about whatever casting we decide to do next week. And hopefully some studios actually are listening next week. So they can, you know, maybe line some stuff up for us. Are you ready to toss this episode in the can?
Yeah, let's go for it.
Cool. All right. Everyone, do us all a favor. Check out our website, top5report.com. There you'll find a link to our social media, along with a link to our email, top5report@gmail.com. We are on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Amazon, Audible. You can subscribe to us in those places. If you do, you will not miss a single episode. You can also leave us a review. We love those 5 stars, but we understand criticism because it helps us get better and it makes the words we say feel important. You can follow me personally on Twitter and Instagram at Drew3927. Peter, what about you?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at NinjaPierre. And that's where I'll be reminding you, you're here a lot now. So there you go.
All right. All right. Well, for the Top 5 Report, I'm Drew.
I'm Peter.
And we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.